Okay, good morning all. Our first case for argument this morning is Fenton versus Dudley. Mr. Newman?
Yes, sir. Are you ready?
I am if you are.
I am, Your Honor.
May it please the court, Mr. Loggins. This is a more compelling case for removal than Rachel for a number of reasons. First off, the state court action has already occurred. It's already happened. This federal court, the federal court below, does not have to make a prediction, as in Rachel, that Ms. Dudley's rights will not be realized in the state court proceeding. Secondly, the federal right at stake here, protected under 1443, is not just Ms. Dudley's personal right, but her right to assist another party in assuring that that party's rights under the Fair Housing Act are secured. So we, instead of Rachel, the single defendant, we have here a facilitator of a federal claim and the party to that federal claim. In addition, it should be noted that this is not just a case of interference within the meaning of 3617. There has been a complete deprivation of Ms. Dudley's right to represent her client in a fair housing case. She has been stripped totally of her ability to represent Ms. Davis in her fair housing case. Fourthly, another feature is that the injunction against Ms. Dudley, while it must be obeyed during its pendency for fear that Ms. Dudley could be held in contempt of court, has at the least dubious legal authority. There is no precedent that I've been able to find where one party has been able to obtain an injunction against a lawyer on the grounds asserted by Mr. Fenton, grounds that where he asserts in his complaint that there may have been tortious interference with his business by the filing of a federal lawsuit, and other reasons that he asserts in his complaint.
Mr. Newman, it's certainly clear that that state court injunction is, I think, at best bizarre.
Yes.
But I'm having difficulty understanding how this could be removable under 1443, subsection 1. The conduct that is alleged in the state court action, defamation, tortious interference, and so on, that's not conduct that the Housing Act immunizes, is it, or makes
that is correct.
Legal.
That is correct.
So don't you run into the kinds of problems that the Peacock case pointed out?
Well, I think the injunction taints the whole complaint. The injunction, which is derived from these claims of tortious interference and defamation, essentially hold in at the state court level that Ms. Dudley does not have the right to pursue this federal housing complaint.
But it is being pursued, isn't it? The arbitration didn't start, right? Mr. Fenton didn't pay his fee, and didn't Ms. Dudley notify Judge Castillo of that and seek to reinstate the litigation part of that?
All of that is correct. But Ms. Dudley is not representing Ms. Davis. Ms. Davis chose Ms. Dudley to represent her. She has a right to be represented by counsel of her choice and not have counsel determined by these kinds of actions of Mr. Fenton disqualifying counsel.
It would make more sense to me if you were in federal court seeking some assistance in pursuing that FHA case, sort of, I don't know, maybe something under the All Writs Act, contending that the state litigation interfered with the jurisdiction of the federal court.
Well, the All Writs Act may be a duplicate remedy, but I believe we have a proper case for removal here where precisely what is prohibited of Ms. Dudley in state court is specifically protected under the Fair Housing Act. And when you have that kind of exact a cancellation of a federal right, that is Rachel. Okay? And by the way, there's no other place where we could get any relief.
Well,
Judge
Castillo could recognize it as an additional Federal Housing Act claim, couldn't he?
We attempted to amend our complaint before Judge Castillo, and instead he ruled that the arbitration prevails, and of course we can't get any kind of relief with the arbitrator with respect to this.
But of course, you're contending that that's over now and moving forward with litigation.
Your Honor, the AAA said that if Mr. Fenton paid our filing fee now, which he has done, then the arbitration can proceed, and we will participate in the arbitration as long as Mr. Fenton abides by the rules. I mean, first he didn't pay, the filing fee, but if we're obligated to pursue the arbitration because of Judge Castillo's order.
I guess I misunderstood. I thought he had not paid the arbitration fee.
He had not. When the motion for reinstatement was filed, subsequent to that, he did. That's not a matter of the record. So that's just new news, I'm telling you.
All right. Thank you.
Yes, sir. We have, of course, our removal requirements, I believe, fulfilled here, Your Honor. But I think what's on your mind is really an access to court kind of consideration which underlies this case, a First Amendment access to court. Of course, the First Amendment's not alleged here, but really what's at stake here is the ability of a Fair Housing Act claimant to be able to pursue the case in federal court with chosen counsel, and that is precisely what's been denied. I would suggest, Your Honor, that the combination of the tortious interference, the defamation claim, which I must add are facially slight in terms of the complaint, especially when the defamation claim focuses on the allegations in the fair housing case of Ms. Davis, but the combination of the tortious interference and the defamation make it doubly clear, combined with the injunction, that the purpose and effect of the state court action is to frustrate this federal right. And I would suggest that this is more extreme than Rachel. That's all I had prepared to say, Your Honor. If there's any other questions.
Mr. Loggins.
May it please the Court. Your Honor, Brandon Loggins on behalf of the appellee. We're operating on two different tracks here. Two different tracks. We have different parties. The defendant is a party in the Davis v. Fenton case. Second, Davis is not listed as a party and is not mentioned or referenced in any pleadings in the state action case. And third, my client, Mr. Fenton's claim, arises under Illinois state law. The defendants cannot remove on the grounds that she has a defense grounded in federal law, since the existence of the federal defense is insignificant to confer the original federal question jurisdiction under 1331. Just to update Your Honor, with the district court case, I'm going to keep on separate tracks. We were not aware of the arbitration demand that was filed by Ms. Davis, so that's why the fee wasn't paid originally. We rectified the situation, alerted Judge Castillo, and right now that case is proceeding with arbitration. But the case before Your Honor, the question is whether Ms. Dudley and defendants can defend their case in state court, in which the answer is yes. They have chose not to participate in that thus far.
Are you involved in the state court litigation, you personally?
No, I'm not involved. I'm involved Yes, I'm assisting with him.
All right. Well, who wrote the injunction? Who actually put pen to paper or pencil to paper and wrote that?
It was an attorney with our office.
Not the judge.
Not the judge, correct.
So if Mr. Fenton's able to tie the hands of the lawyers representing Ms. Davis, isn't he effectively able to impede her litigation?
Your Honor, our intent was not to impede the federal litigation and Ms. Dudley.
There's no exception in that injunction for that case or the representation of Ms. Davis. She would be included within the language of the injunction.
I believe that can be resolved in a state court action or on a motion to reconsider.
I guess, I can't understand why there was any need for an ex parte injunction.
Mainly
her
because
were known, her right. Lawyers were identified. It would be simple to get them there to allow them a chance to resist that.
Your Honor, this case is complicated because in the federal case, Ms. Davis is represented by an attorney who worked for Mr. Fenton's office. So there's issues related to privilege and as well as confidentiality, and that attorney, which is included in the state case, was doing reparable harm to Mr. Fenton's office. Particularly, they were engaging in the public forum saying that Mr. Fenton was soliciting African Americans and not representing them properly in foreclosure defense litigation.
Sounds pretty much like First Amendment activity to me.
Mm.
So in any event, it seems like the state court action is as a focus, an effort to impede the FHA proceeding. That's troubling.
You raise a legitimate concern, Your Honor, but there's two state court actions. There's the injunction, and then there's the state law claims for tortious interference, abusive relation, defamation.
Well, the injunction's based on that, on those allegations, based on those theories.
Correct. So they are one and the same. But again, Ms. Dudley or Ms. Adia, they have not participated in that suit. And the judge was well aware. We put it before her. That's where she decided. The state court should be the best forum to resolve this.
What's the status of the state court?
The state court litigation is still pending as a result of the litigation we have had in the removal. The district court got it right.
Is it stayed in the state court?
It's currently stayed, pending Your Honor's decision. Now, again, counsel did not raise any abuse of discretion among the district court judge, and our position is the district court judge was correct in this matter in the sense that remand was proper. All Mr. Fenton's claims, again, arise under state law, and they make no reference to the pending federal case. So the issues, counsel didn't raise any new facts or anything that would warrant a federal claim. And Your Honor, you mentioned the Peacock case, and our position is that this case falls in line with that. There's I see my time has expired.
Until the red light goes on.
Oh, okay. There's no indication that defendants couldn't seek their relief in a state court action.
Well, that injunction is pretty frightening, actually. I mean, it's issued well knowing of the presence of the removal, it even says it in the injunction itself, right in the face of the removal, which would tell any judge that they no longer had jurisdiction over that case. Until the removal is resolved, they don't have that case. So the injunction, being ex parte, tying the hands of lawyers, referring to the removal, which recognizes lack of jurisdiction, shows that trouble anyone thinking about that court and how that court might handle that case. Could Dudley get a fair hearing there?
I believe, Your Honor, she can get a fair hearing. And if they would participate in the case, they can assert any defense, a motion to dismiss, or anything to remedy that.
Run in to see the judge behind her back to get this injunction in the face of removal, well aware of removal, how can she get a fair hearing? It sounds like the judge would be willing to sign whatever Fenton places in front of her.
Your Honor, we were straightforward in notifying the judge of the pendency of the action. She ruled. Ms. Dudley has not participated in stay action. As a practical matter, it will only complicate both cases further if the district court decision was reversed. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Loggins. Mr. Newman?
I'd like to make five quick points in my minute here. First of all, on the subject of whether we can succeed in state court, whether we can properly defend in state court, Rachel said it didn't make any difference that one could make a prediction that you could win the criminal prosecution in the state of Georgia courts. So a potential outcome in the state court does not affect the removal question. Second of all, the state court action has not been stayed at all. Thirdly, please recall that how stuck we are in state court, because appealing a preliminary injunction under Illinois law involves an abuse of discretion standard on appeal. It's tough to overturn.
The absence of jurisdiction is pretty evident proof of.
Right. Right. Now, I haven't found a case exactly like this where you have a clear removable issue, the injunction issue coming out of these other claims, added to the conversion claim.
You're
okay?
Not just trying to remove the injunction, though. You're trying to remove the whole case.
Of course. But if a case is properly removable, as this one is, a district court has the discretion to do a partial remand. That's an issue that would be before the district court. I would argue to the district court that all these are so interrelated that that the district court should keep them. But the district court does have the discretion to sort out these claims if they can be sorted out. I would suggest to the district court that they can't be, that the whole case should stay in district court. I see my red light.
Well, you have until the red light's on.
Which one's the red?
One on the right.
You're far right.
Oh, that's all right. Well, that's all I have, unless you have something further. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Newman. Thank you, Mr. Loggins. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.